Hey PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out PTLive.me.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Yeah. All right, another episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. Our guest today is a physical therapist, strength coach, and international educator in the areas of mobility and movement. He spent 7 years active duty in the U.S. Army before leaving service to take a position with Kelly Starrett's Mobility Wad staff. He opened a cash-based PT practice in Atlanta after leaving service in the Army 2 years ago. He's also a fellow podcaster as the co-host of the Doc and Jock podcast, which is currently atop the 30 health and fitness podcasts in iTunes. You can check out more at docandjock.com. Welcome to the show, Danny Mata.
Man, that's a good intro. You're better than us.
First question is always the hardest. What are we drinking?
I've got a Wild Heaven Ode to Mercy Imperial Brown Ale. And I feel really bad because it's good. It's a good brewery out of Athens, but there's a brewery in my neighborhood right down the road called Eventide. And I love their beer, but I end up drinking it all before our podcast. So I'll give them a shout out. But yeah, Wild Heaven Imperial Brown Ale.
I am going with, you know, when like the people are in the supermarket doing sampling. And the girl and the girl was very, very cute, so I decided to buy what she was peddling. And it's the new Sam Adams Nitro IPA. They put Nitro in the big cans now from Jim Koch and the guys at the Sam Adams Brewery. So cheers to you for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Sure. No, thanks for having me.
And also, thank you for your service. 7 years active duty in the U.S. Army, and you were stationed out in Hawaii, right? That's a rough gig.
Right. I think I'm the luckiest person to have ever joined the military. You know, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time. I feel like that I owe them more than what they got out of me, you know, and it was definitely an experience that I wouldn't trade for anything. I wouldn't. The school I went to, the brigade I got to work with, the contacts and friends that I've made along the way that are influential in our community, it was awesome. So if you have a chance, if you're a student listening to this, not a bad route to go.
So which route did you go? Did you go to PT school, then Army, or did you go to Army PT school? Because every time I ask someone this question, I think the rules kind of change every once in a while.
Well, it depends. It depends. You can get commissioned after you've graduated. They have a certain amount of those slots every year. They don't always have them. It just depends on the year and the funding cycles and things. I went through the Army Baylor program. So I was in San Antonio and I went through that program. So I was actually active duty while I was in school for those, you know, for those 3 years. So I wore a uniform to class every day. And I spent 4 years in for my commitment after that. And then ended up deciding to leave service from active duty. But do either one. And to be honest with you, I think it's one of those things that it might actually, some of your listeners that are students, they might look back on it and be like, dang, I should have done the Baylor program, because it's like the military's best kept secret. The reason I say that is you leave with no student loans, you get commissioned, so you actually get paid to go to school, which is like unheard of, right? I mean, nice. I was thinking about the military and PT school anyway. When I learned about this program, I thought it was too good to be true. So take a look at it. U.S. Army Baylor DPT program. It's pretty awesome.
All right. So you go through that. You get paid to do PT school. And then where do you get sent? Do you go to Hawaii right away?
Yeah. So I went out to Hawaii and I got stationed out there. And I took a role as an assistant chief initially, Schofield Barracks Health Clinic. I primarily was doing patient care work, but got an opportunity to do a lot of human performance optimization. They have a program out there called the ATTAC program, which is the Advanced Tactical Athlete and Conditioning Program. We would go out in the mornings and we would teach agility drills. We would do some pool PT-based stuff. We would do basic strength and conditioning things, running technique drills, and classes with pose running. So I got exposed to all this stuff very early on out there, and then eventually ended up taking a job with a brigade at the 25th Infantry Division and 2nd Brigade, which basically means they take one PT and they basically lump them into a brigade, and you're in charge of injury treatment, injury prevention, and human performance optimization. So you kind of have these multiple hats. And
And I'm a civilian. How many guys are in a brigade? How many guys and girls in a brigade?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, let me explain that. 3,500 roughly.
Oh, and, I was thinking a little smaller than that. That's a lot. That's 3,500 for one PT?
For one PT, wow. Yeah. It is a lot. If you're going to make a dent in that, you cannot just do patient care. You have to do injury prevention. But injury prevention is boring. Nobody cares about that. I mean, nobody cares about getting hurt until they're hurt. And right. At that point, it's too late. So what do we have to do is really mask injury prevention in performance optimization. And that's what we did.
How do you do that with 3,500 people and you're going to have some guys who are on the bleeding edge in terms of these guys are in super tip-top shape and you got some people are at the bell curve. How do you do that when you've got this mass of 3,500 people to deal with?
The route that I took was to get buy-in with middle-of-the-road leaders, so company commanders, which are in charge of like 100 to 150 guys. When we would get in front of them and explain some of this stuff, it helped a lot that I was out there training with them. That was a big thing. You have to kind of lead from the front, right?
Right.
So I would push it as performance. So if somebody's more mechanically efficient as a runner and we're running a 2 mile test for, you know, our PT test, it's not unheard of for us to be able to cut a minute to 2 minutes off their 2 mile time in a month, you know, just purely from technique or even shorter times. When we would tell them, hey, I think I can help your guys across the board drop their run times, then they were really excited to hear that. Now, it just so happens that because they're mechanically efficient, they're less likely to have PFPS and end up in my clinic. It was kind of a win-win, but you have to package it in a certain way that they care about.
You got to sell it to them just as if they were a patient, you know, off the street, but they're automatically tied to you because you're tied to them in terms of being with the brigade.
Exactly. And the other thing is there's a huge stigma about going to see a medical provider in the military. Anybody that's been in the military realizes this. Like, there's sick call hours where you can go in the mornings before work, but the thing is it's during physical training hours. So if you go to sick call, you miss physical training and you'll get harassed to no end in some cases. You're not supposed to, but it happens. And there's still this very, old school mentality in many providers. And frankly, I don't have a problem with that because that's a hard job and it kind of weeds some people out. If you're in the infantry, man, this is not an easy job. And if you can't tolerate it and you break down, I'd rather you do it in a training environment than downrange when the stakes are a lot higher.
So now, did you have the strength coach background for PT school?
I did my undergrad in exercise physiology. We did a lot of strength coach work. I was a personal trainer when I was in college. We would do like programming with people with our staff for the collegiate teams where I went to school. And then
where'd you go to school?
Georgia College and State University, which is a little D2 school here in Millersville, Georgia, which is pretty small, but
cool.
It was great. It was, you know, the exercise science program was one of the best ones I could find. So that's really why we picked it, but it was fun. I enjoyed it myself. So I kind of delved into it, but a lot of it was, it was not something that we necessarily learned in PT school. In fact, not at all. I mean, we really had to want to learn it on your own whenever you got out. You would never have the opportunity to do it in school.
I got news for you. It's still kind of the same way.
Yeah. And it sucks. Here's the realization that I would say most people come to is, look, you're in PT school to learn the basics. You're in PT school to learn how to be safe and how to understand when somebody doesn't belong in your clinic. But you're also there to learn how to pass the boards. I mean, a lot of these schools, they really, really are proud of their pass rates. So they want you to pass the boards. And if you have to learn how to use ultrasound to do so, then you learn ultrasound. But
right.
I would have much rather learn how to teach somebody how to box squat than how to do ultrasound.
Yeah, no, that's a good, not to jump ahead, but having something like a podcast with a PT and a strength coach together and just shooting the breeze and bringing on people like, you know, Johnny Owens, who's doing this
right.
really, really bleeding edge revolutionary thing, and just to be able to listen, that's a huge advantage in terms of leveraging technology like blogs, like Tony Gentilcore or
yep.
Lenny Macrina, being able to peer in and see what those guys are actually thinking. That's something that I think I took upon myself because I was a communications major in undergrad. I didn't have that background. So here in PT school, I thought I was originally going to get it, saw that we weren't, and then I went to those blogs and those podcasts and I said, well, now I'm going to get it from these guys. Kudos to you for getting drunk one day and put on a podcast. You got to tell that story. How did the Doc and Jock podcast originate? Because it sounds a lot similar to mine.
It's probably. Is. So the guy that I do my podcast with, Barbell Joe, Coach Joe, is he's a friend of mine. His wife and I actually went to PT school together at Baylor. And then we got actually stationed in Hawaii together. So we've had a bromance now for almost a decade. And we followed each other around the U.S. And even when I got, reassigned down into Georgia, they got reassigned to South Carolina. So we just literally followed each other around. And finally, one day, the Army decided to break us up and move her up to West Point as she got into a advanced DSC program in sports medicine. When that happened, you know, we said, hey, dude, this would be a good way for us to stay connected and be able to talk about these topics that we were talking about anyway. So one night, when he was down here right before CrossFit Regionals, kind of got wasted, first of all, and decided like, hey, yeah, let's record one. So we did one in person, and it was terrible, and our wives didn't let us keep it. So then we actually did a legit first one and committed to a year, because I think a lot of people have good ideas, and this is something that I've learned the hard way. A lot of people have good ideas, but the actual implementation of those things,
execution
to certain things, man, it's just not there. And you can only put your effort, you have limited bandwidth, you can only put your effort towards certain things. And this, and honestly, that podcast is my favorite thing to do these days. I love it.
Yeah, I've been told by some people who have come across, you know, professors that have met me at conferences and say, you really shouldn't be spending time on something like that. It's really like, you know, it's not a really effective use of your time. And I would kind of like look at them quizzically and say, have you listened to it? I mean, look who I'm speaking with and what I'm talking about. This is the best use of my time. But kudos to you, because you guys just passed a year of putting out a podcast.
We did, yeah. So we, April 1st was our first one that we did last year. We said like, all right, we'll commit to a year. And we liked it so much, we started getting all these questions on Instagram and email and stuff. And so people were asking us like individualized. I mean, somebody sent me their knee MRI from Dubai one time on Instagram. Like, and Joe and I were like, all right, we're going to answer these. So we're going to start we'll basically do like one longer interview or a talk between he and I, and then we'll do one shorter one where we go over like a specific topic that somebody has brought up, whether that be strength and conditioning or PT related or whatever it might be.
I'd be a crappy host if I didn't let you know how you can get in touch with Danny. You can check him out on Twitter, Danny Mata PT. You can check out his website for his clinic, which is athletespotential.com, and the Twitter feed for the Doc and Jock podcast at Doc and Jock. We wanted to talk about what I think a lot of PT students that I've been reading about in terms of starting blogs and the hybrid PT strength coach and why it's becoming so popular. I think we kind of touched on it because we see a need for it in terms of people who want to work with higher end athletes or tactical athletes. And that information, that education, isn't necessarily in PT school. So why is it becoming so popular right now? Where have you seen this kind of particular area grow and explode?
I don't know much different. You know, I mean, like I kind of got out of school and got tossed right into something that was very similar to what I do now. But it's very different than a traditional clinic, right? So my last year at Baylor, we do a year-long internship. And I was at a traditional high-volume insurance-based clinic. Thing is, I didn't necessarily hate it, but I didn't really love it either. And anytime I got somebody that was more complex and more athletic, it was like we'd fight over that person. We were like, no, I got dibs on this guy. You know, he's a runner or whatever it was. When I got to my brigade, that's all I was seeing and that's all I saw. And so when I got out of the Army, you know, my wife was like, hey, well, which direction do you want to go? And I wanted to go that direction that I could work with people one-on-one and be able to do a lot of movement retraining, utilize manual skills with it. So I think this hybrid role, I think the reason why it's become so popular is because people see it as a way to have more exposure in multiple areas and break up some of the monotony of the day to day, right? So it's intriguing. And not only that, but man, I started my first office and we still have this office as a satellite office was in a CrossFit gym. I literally opened up shop. There was like a bod pod in one office and a little kind of waiting room, and then an office with no windows, none. I had a squirrel, I'm going to say squirrel, I think it was a rat, running around over my head for like 3 months. But you know what? People kept coming because I was able to spend an hour with them and I'm showing them things, how to move better that no one ever did. And it's crazy. Like if your shins hurt when you ran, wouldn't you think it'd be weird if somebody didn't watch you run?
Right.
If you went to the mechanic, your car was like shaking whenever it stopped. Don't you think you'd start it up? Drive it around and stop it and see what happens.
I mean, that's a great analogy right there. So that jumps us into the next topic, something we touched on in a previous episode with Kyle Adams, which is the viability of PT practices within gyms. It seems pretty intuitive to do exactly what you just said, be where the person is moving poorly or feeling pain and be right there as a PT.
I think the viability, I mean, I'm still in business, and we've expanded to a second location. It's something that's, it's not the viability of the location, it's the person that is there in many cases. Like how, you have to understand that one little gym is not going to sustain a practice. Okay, you have to know how to sell yourself and you have to be able to get out there in front of people. And there's different ways to do that. With me, I spent like multiple days every week when we first opened up. I did this actually probably for about 6 months where I would teach 2 to 3 nights every week, and I still teach quite a bit at different gyms, at different running clubs, all kinds of stuff.
What things are you teaching?
My wheelhouse is the mobility WOD stuff.
Right.
I mean, I teach that stuff on the weekends for full-on certification. So what I'll do is I'll come in and I'll say, all right, well, let me talk to the staff. What problem are you having? And in a lot of places, it's like, all right, shoulder impingement or lower back injuries or runners, you know, it's going to be like knee pain or hip pain when they run. So we'll come in, we'll talk about some mechanics of the area, and then we'll give them some actionable things like, you know, some simple self-myofascial release stuff, a lacrosse ball, or we'll go over mechanics. I mean, I had 14 mom runners club members in my office Saturday morning. I had them running barefoot in the grass and it was cold and they were all complaining. It was awesome. It made me feel like I was in the military again. So like, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. We have to get out and teach these people. Otherwise, you're going to sit in that little office by yourself and nobody's going to come in, and it's just going to be depressing and you're going to hear crickets.
When you're set up in a gym facility like that, if you're in between patients, are you walking around the gym? Are you spotting things? Are you bringing? Because that's a tough sell. You know, some people don't want to be bothered while they're working out. But if you spot something, what do you do? How do you say it, or how do you not say it?
Originally, I had way more downtime. So I mean, you're always going to have a period of time where, you know, you got more time than you do patients. So I did a couple things. Number one, I spent a lot of time producing content, blogging, videos, just trying to produce things that were tangible, that people could use, and were helpful. And yeah, I would go around. I would help coach somewhat initially. And I haven't been able to do that recently because we've just been so busy. But you have to know how to coach. I mean, physical therapy is essentially advanced personal training. Let's be honest. Like, you're just doing things with people that are much lower level, and you're getting them to maybe a little bit lower level than what a personal trainer would do. But you have to be able to connect with these people, and you have to be able to engage and for them to understand what you're talking about and be able to teach that. It's no different to a group. That's a great way to do it. But I would do that, and people would ask me questions. But then it gets kind of annoying because maybe, you know, you're in the middle of working with a patient and somebody asks you a question and you kind of have to explain to them like, hey, well, I'm kind of in the middle of something right now, and let's address this, you know, at lunch or something. So yeah, you definitely have to get out. You can't just sit there and wait for people to come, because it won't happen.
What's the relationship like with you and the gym? You're renting some space in there, like you said, but what's the relationship like between the staff and you? How do you set that up for success?
Okay, so what I did early on was I actually did a lot of initial sessions with coaches that were comped. I had nothing to do. I literally moved to a city where I knew no one. I had never been in private practice before. Just tried to grow a business. And the way that we did that was really showing people what we could do. And a lot of it was coaches. So if the coaches realized, like, I had a junky shoulder, Danny saw me once, my shoulder feels better, and then they've got 20 people in front of them and somebody has a junky shoulder, pretty likely he's going to say, you should go check out Danny.
But they didn't see you in terms of the personal trainers or the people within the gym. They didn't see you as competition, trying to step on toes, because that's what I would imagine.
No, I think
did it the right way.
Well, first of all, you can't do that, because then you're an asshole.
Right.
And then nobody's going to send you. No one's going to want to work with you. What you have to look at is, there's gray area there. But what role can I sustain better? What can I do for them that's going to help, right? So I'm not an Olympic weightlifting coach, but I understand the Olympic weightlifts. So if somebody comes in to see me and they're having a shoulder issue with the snatch or the clean and jerk, I know how to look at that and break it down and be able to give them some advice and do some manual techniques that might improve the program that they're doing or the positioning that they're in, and hand them back off to the coach with an LCC coaches on plenty of stuff that I want their athletes to do, and say like, hey, this is what I want them to do. And it's about how well can I keep your members healthy, because it's way easier to keep a existing member than it is to get a new one. And they know the lifetime value of these people. I mean, this is a business. They understand that. If I can keep them there, that's worth a lot of money for them.
That's just smart business.
Totally. And not only that, but at this point, what you'll notice, and this is a trend that I see quite a bit, is a lot of gyms, the ones that are more progressive, they have a relationship with somebody in-house, or they're looking for that. My buddy in Washington, D.C., who owns District CrossFit, he's been looking for that for months, and he just can't find the right person to fit the role. And that's the hard part, too, is you kind of have to have you have to have a hybrid positional understanding of that.
Not to pimp myself out, I graduate in several months and I am in the Washington, D.C. area. Just putting that out there.
There you go. And his name is Andrew Killian, District CrossFit. I will link you two up.
Sounds good. All right. Going to answer a question from our Twitter followers. Found out that I was talking with you a couple hours ago. And MD Beria, he wanted to know if he wanted to get involved in coaching or training or doing PT with tactical athletes, people who are currently serving in the military. Is it possible? Is it just impossibly difficult? to be a civilian and be working at someplace like Walter Reed or with a base? I know they have civilian contractors, but what's the potential there for that?
No, you can totally do it. I mean, there's contractors, there's GS positions. It depends what role you want to fill. I tell you what's really cool is they've got some of these special operations slots that are civilians. There's a program called Thor 3, which is a special operations. It's basically their strength and conditioning program, but that program has funding for physical therapists, athletic trainers, strength coaches, and these guys get to work in really high-level facilities with really high-level athletes that if someone said, hey, you can take a job with, you know, the Atlanta Falcons or this Special Forces group, in a heartbeat, I would take that job with the Special Forces group. You know, I'm a Falcons fan, but what these guys do on a day-in and day-out basis for you and I is much more than what Roddy White did for us. Roddy White did for us last year. And it means a lot more, in my opinion, for you to give back to that community. And you get paid to do it. I mean, it's not like it's free, you know. So you can look into those for sure. Also, understand what you're getting yourself into, because some of these jobs are at major hospitals, and you're going to have to do inpatient hours. You know, you're going to see retirees, you're going to see kids, you're going to see populations that you may not associate with the military as well. So understand what you're getting yourself into and where that job is within the military.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about why PTs need to lead from the front. Also want to talk a little bit about tactical and mobility WOD and where that began with you. We'll be back in 60 seconds on the PT Pinecast with Danny Mata.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This is the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is powered by ptlive.me. PT Live wants you to know, we know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. PTLive.me. We'll take it from here.
The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org. Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
All right, we're back on the PT Pinecast with Danny Mata. Check him out on Twitter at Danny Mata PT. His website, athletespotential.com. And of course, he is the co-host along with Barbell Joe of the Doc and Jock podcast, currently the top 30 health and fitness podcast on iTunes. That's a big mountain to climb because there's a lot of health, because they lump health and fitness in there, and you guys literally are that health and fitness. Barbell right. Joe, strength guy, Doc, PT.
What's baffling to me is when I look at the analytics and I see around the world where people download this, it's crazy.
Weird.
I mean, I had like 900 downloads in Germany last month. I don't know a single person in Germany, right? I mean, I don't know how this stuff spreads, but it does. And it's, you know, it's cool for Joe and I because it's kind of time consuming. Half the time, you know, we're running home to put our kids to bed as soon as we can and then jump on a podcast with somebody. But it's just so cool to be able to talk to world-class people, which I would pay a lot of money to be able to do.
Yeah.
And then they do it for free and people, they contact us.
People do pay a lot of money for conferences and be able to do Q&As and stuff like that. They do pay a lot for that.
True. And if you're not listening to, well, obviously if you're listening to podcasts, you're listening to this, but I tell people all the time, they're just missing out on an opportunity for some free education and you can learn some really, really interesting things.
Yeah. Is it still fun for you guys even after a year?
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, we talked to Chris Duffin the other night, who Chris Duffin is a powerlifting athlete that is like one of the few men to ever back squat four times body weight.
Wow.
So he back squatted 881 pounds, weighing 220 pounds. And he's an absolute animal. And he's doing really cool movement stuff with like mixing dynamic neuromuscular stabilization techniques and with powerlifting. And I had a blast, man. And I had a hard time going to bed afterward because I get so jacked up doing it.
That was exactly the same thing. When we recorded our first six episodes, our first six pack I turned to my roommate who was kind of had headphones on and was just listening in from the background. And it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I just wanted to like just do 1,000 push-ups to get the edge off. Cause I was like, this was cool. I don't know what this is, but this is cool.
And you do a great job, man. I mean, I listen to your podcast and I love that someone is highlighting, you know, physical therapists around the country because in many ways I feel like, you know, PTs, we kind of have we don't really know what we are, or it's hard for us to kind of come together and say, hey, this is what physical therapy is, because it can be so diverse. So it's really cool to hear, you know, you had Julie Weeb, you know, with the pelvic floor stuff. And I'm like, hell yeah, man, you're teaching people how to engage your core while you deadlift. Like, that's pelvic floor work, essentially, if you can do it right, you know. So that's great. And there's a lot of overlap.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. So why PTs need to lead from the front in regards to health? That's some topic we had talked before the interview bringing up. What does that mean to you?
To me, it means you need to be healthy yourself. If you're an unhealthy physical therapist, it's like a physician that tells you to stop smoking and then goes out and smokes in the parking lot. It's ridiculous. You can't do that. If you're not training yourself, if you're not eating well, if you're not putting some work in on yourself, what makes you think that whoever you talk to is going to be compliant with what you have to say? Some of the stuff we tell people to do hurts and it's hard. And if you look like an out of shape slob, frankly, you need to get your shit together, because you're watering down our community. And we should be leading from the front. We should be models of health and fitness. I'm not saying you have to be an Adonis or you have to be doing Ironman triathlons, but damn it, you should be doing something.
Yeah, you got to walk the walk.
Absolutely. And I don't care if you do inpatient or home health, whatever the hell it is. You know, you're still talking about, you know, health, exercise, mobility work, strength. That's half. I mean, that's predominantly what we do. You have to do it. And not only that, you should, because we know better. We know better than most.
We're saying to these people, convincing them that this is going to make them better. This will make you feel better. This will make you move better. And if we're not doing it ourselves, ooh, that's not really good for our profession. That's not a good look.
No, not at all. And not only that, but like, I was the most unhealthy I've ever been in physical therapy school. I mean, we have a very condensed program at Baylor. And I was just like, I mean, I remember getting my blood work done before I moved out to my first assignment. And it was really bad. My blood pressure was high, completely out of shape. I was stressed out all the time. And if I could go back and change one thing, it would have been that I would have spent more time training in the gym, because I think it would have affected me more positively. I mean, I was just struggling to try to get through school, man.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
rough.
Like,
I do know. I know right now. I know it, because I'm at the end.
But yeah, you just got back from the gym. You're do better than I did.
It's tough, but it is all encompassing. You know, I mean, some friends of mine who are not, you know, not PTs, not in PT school, were like, isn't it just like undergrad? But, you know, a little, because some of them are, a lot of my friends at home are teachers. They did their master's degree.
Right.
And like, well, I was working while I did that, so isn't that kind of similar? I'm like, no, man. PT school is like a wet blanket, you know, it just wraps and consumes you. But you're right. We have to be able to put our money where our mouth is and make sure that we're doing the things we would and or eventually will tell our patients to do.
Absolutely. We have to. So it's not just the strength coach hybrid kind of thing with, you know, PT, strength coach, whatever. It's just everybody. I mean, it's irritating for me to see that. What if you saw a fat personal trainer? Would you go work with that person?
Or a skinny chef.
A skinny chef. Yeah, do not want to eat at a skinny chef's restaurant. That's a great point, man. I want a fat bearded chef.
That's what I want. All right, so you're one of only 8 instructors on the planet Earth for the Mobility Wad group, and that's founded by Kelly Sturette. We had Kelly on the show not long ago, and one of my professors who knows me really well listened to the episode, and she says, I've known you for 3 years in PT school. Kelly Sturette's the only guy who can talk faster than you, longer than you. I sat there in the episode. He is machine gun fast. How'd you guys get in touch? How'd you guys connect?
I basically cold called him. I had no intentions of working for the man. What I was looking to do was try to get a better idea of what I could do at my brigade with the Mobility Wad techniques that I'd seen on YouTube. And it's actually a funny story, because the person that introduced me to Mobility Wad is actually Joe Shimonic, the guy I do my podcast with. He was a coach and an athlete at a CrossFit gym in Honolulu, Hawaii, when we were stationed there together. And I was doing some Olympic lifting work with him one weekend, and I was telling him about my problem with having all these injuries and being understaffed. And he goes, well, man, you should check out Mobility Wad. You know, this guy, Kelly Sturette, talking about some interesting stuff about kind of self-treatment and some things that you could do. You might be able to help with your soldiers. So I went home and I watched, like, I don't know, probably 50 videos Saturday.
You could just watch for weeks, just his stuff, back to back to back. He's got it for days.
Dude, if you haven't watched all the videos.
For free.
Start with number one, which is, it's funny. And I always tell people, if you haven't seen number one, this will, for the ladies, this will help probably. It's Kelly Sturette with his iPhone. And it's basically like a close-up of his nuts for like 5 minutes as he talks about the squat test. It's true. Go back and watch it.
I've seen it. I know what you're talking about.
There you go. So now I get that a few more hits on YouTube. But that's where I started. I started at the beginning. I watched the first 50. And then that Monday, I literally just called them. And it's funny when I look back on it because his wife answered the phone. And their old gym was in a parking lot behind a sporting goods store. And they had a phone that they had rigged this like completely probably illegal phone line from the store to this Connex box where they had their t-shirts and some equipment. And I called and no one ever answered that phone apparently. Juliet happened to be in there getting somebody a t-shirt. She picked up the phone and I said, hey, you know, this is, I'm a PT and I want to come out and work with you guys and just like see how you run things so that I can take this back to my brigade. And I'm, you know, I told her I was in the military and I want to help, you know, my guys with it. And she was like, cool. What do you want to come out? So I went out in like April and spent a week out there. And I spent a lot of time with all their coaches. The whole time wasn't with Kelly. I mean, he was finishing up some of the first edits for Becoming a Supple Leopard. So he was like, you know, super busy. He's always busy. But, yeah. You know, I got a chance to hang with him and I got a chance to hang with their coaches and just do some really cool stuff. And I took it back and I started applying it. And one of the things that I did was actually collect some data on one of the companies that I had. And I showed a really cool drop in injury rates and an increase in PT scores by taking their Wednesday away. So I basically took their Wednesday away. I made it a 100% mobility and recovery day where we talked about skill. So we talked about squat technique, deadlift technique, running technique, pressing technique, and then how to do push-ups correctly. And then we just did mobility stuff and would just like step on each other's leg or have a bunch of lacrosse balls out there and just do a bunch of self-release. And we saw some really cool changes. So basically, he said, oh, awesome, man. Well, I'm headed out to Hawaii in November. I'd like to do a course for your brigade, you know, because I'll be there anyway. And you did all this, you know, data collection stuff. And I was like, hell yeah, you know, we'll set it up. And we got him in on a Friday. And then that weekend, we were sitting for one of the courses. He asked me to help teach that Saturday and Sunday. And he was like, yeah, you should teach this course for me sometime, right? And I was like, yeah, that'd be cool, but kind of supposed to go to Afghanistan. So long story short, he was like, oh, we'll save your slot. You could do your thing. And come back and my deployment ended up getting canceled last minute. It was like 2 months out and they canceled it. You know, my wife, she goes, I think it's probably meant to be. We should probably do this. And we decided to make the change and shift gears and get out of the military.
Well, that's a cool story. And it also highlights something that I've heard numerous times. And when you do a lot of these podcasts, even though you're talking to vastly different people, you start to pick up themes. You start to pick up similarities. And the similarity I just picked up from that story was you just called and asked and then you showed up. And it doesn't matter who the person is. We talked a little bit off air about, you know, you having some students who just call your email you and say, hey, can I just come watch you work? And you're like, sure, come on down. You got some students from Tennessee just driving down to Atlanta and going to hang out with you and shadow you for a day. And that's the way you get ahead, is by taking a shot and literally calling a phone line that no one's picking up and up, oh, someone picks it up, serendipity. And now you've got something else going on with the Mobility Wad Tactical.
Yeah, no, you're dead on, man. And there's nothing, there's nothing special about what I do. I don't have any, I have nothing to hide. If you want to come down and see what we do, just go right ahead. You know, the only people we don't really want hanging out with us a lot are people that are like opening private practices that are similar to us in the same area. And you'd be surprised. I get people that reach out to us and do the same thing. And we're like, well, where are you located? And what are your intentions? And they're like, well, I want to do this, this, and this. And it's basically the same thing that we're doing. And I'm cool, dude. I'm open book, but I'm also a businessman. And there's some things that go along with that. But yeah, if you're a student, and I might get inundated with like requests, but if you're willing to make the trip, that's cool. I've probably had 24 students from around the country that have come to work with me over the past, you know, year and a half, roughly.
We talked a little bit before we started recording and before we cracked our beers about what kind of started this podcast for me. I went to the Next conference a couple of years ago in Charlotte and saw a tactical athlete presentation. It was actually three different presentations in one. And I just loved it. As a first-year student, I knew I didn't know one-tenth of what was going on and being said. So if someone were to ask you, Mobility Wad Tactical, what is it? What do you respond with? How do you answer that?
So Mobility Wad Tactical is an offshoot of Mobility Wad that I've pretty much been like, you know, given free reign to do what I want with at this point. But it started with Kelly. And I don't think people really realize this with how much he has taught over the last probably 5 years and a lot of military, a lot of high, high level military at that. So it was kind of just, it's nothing we really talked about. He just would kind of do it and that was the end of it. With some of these guys, we're really not even supposed to talk about. So when I came on, it was kind of natural for me to take these consulting options that we had requests for. It's an opportunity for us to talk with the coaches, the strength staff that's there, or the medics or whatever it might be, get a better idea of where their problems are, and then put something together that's going to be specific to them. But many of their problems are the same, right? So dealing with moving under load, lots of running. Shoulder issues are rampant in the military because of body armor and having a ruck on that's just very, very heavy. The loads are extremely heavy for long periods of time. These guys beat themselves up. So what's the best answer? Well, the best answer is you have to understand how to take care of yourself. If you do, and then you understand some simple techniques to just perform basic human maintenance, you're going to have more longevity. And not only that, when you get out of the military, you're not going to have all these cool resources anymore. You're on your own, you know, so you better, you know, understand a little something about taking care of your body. Otherwise, you're just going to be dependent on a provider for the rest of your life.
Yeah, we talked with a military PT, Katie Obright, and she said their health, their mobility is their job. It's their paycheck. So that's kind of important, especially for that population, especially for that group. And Mobility WOD, you're a direct consultant to numerous tactical organizations. And just reading these, the names of the organizations makes me want to like get up and run out of here. You're working with the FBI, SWAT, U.S. Army, Combined Arms Group. I mean, that's a cool subset, special group of athletes.
Yeah, they are athletes. That's really the way you have to look at it. And they're being treated like athletes now. So, you know, I had an opportunity to teach down at the Air Force Special Operations Strength and Conditioning Symposium, which was back in February, I believe, is when I was down there in Florida. What's cool is that everybody is starting to understand that there are certain movements that their athletes should probably do. And a large subset of that is moving towards the Olympic lift community. Okay, so the Olympic lifts, this is a conversation I had with Glenn Pendley, who's an Olympic lifting coach that runs Muscle Driver. You know, and I asked him about what his thoughts were on the tactical athlete community, because I'd seen so much of this in the places where we were going. And what you have to think about is, all right, what is their job? It's not a upright sport. It's not like basketball. It's not like football, I guess you could say, is kind of more on the ground in a way, but still very upright. But with tactical athletes, they don't know what the hell they're going to do. They may need to get on the ground and crawl. In fact, they absolutely need to for purposes of not getting shot, you know, climbing over things, doing all kinds of stuff. So when we look at the Olympic lifts, and this is really interesting, I view them as a way, it's a barometer with how much mobility and control do you have, right? How much capacity do you have? So if you can do a snatch, not even a heavy snatch, but a lightweight snatch, and show the capacity to drop down, catch a weight over your head in an overhead squat and stand it back up, that shows me that you have enough ankle capacity, you have enough hip capacity, you have enough thoracic spine mobility, enough shoulder stability, and you have enough skill and control through that movement to actually complete it, right? So could you imagine, and this isn't just the tactical community, but what if you were 65 years old and you could take a 45-pound empty barbell, pick it up without straining your back, put it on your back, and do a snatch balance and just drop under it? Do you think you'd have a hard time getting up and down stairs?
Nope.
Or wiping your own ass and end up in a, you know, old folks home? Heck no, man. You'd be out there living your life and enjoying it and playing with your grandkids. So I think these two movements in many ways can solve a lot of problems and can keep you really healthy and mobile and strong. So this is what I see with the strength and conditioning community. And it's cool that they're adopting this and they're teaching these guys and training these guys as if they're athletes, because they are.
You talked about strength training for older adults and what that'll do. There's just a video circulating on Facebook of some guy who's like 91 years old and he's just back squatting. I mean, deep. He's doing a deep back squat and he looks good. I mean, just besides the mobility and the range of motion, I mean, the strength gains, study after study saying that lifting weights is going to make you healthier longer.
Right.
This is what PT as a field needs to be promoting. And that's where that we go back to that original topic of the PT strength coach hybrid. We need to be able to make sure our patients can do just the Olympic lifts or wiping your own ass. That's a functional movement.
Totally. And the squat is everywhere, right? Uh-huh. I mean, I remember being in an inpatient PT at a VA hospital in San Antonio, Texas, when I was doing my rotation through PT school. I remember I had this guy and he had a total knee surgery, and I had him just doing sit to stands on the side of the bed. And, you know, and he's, to him, this was hard. He had just, you know, he'd just gone through a major surgery and all that. But, you know, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, oh, right, squat patterns, you know, like we're getting back into this, because he's got to get off the toilet. He's got to get down to the toilet. He's got to get in and out of his car, you know. So when you look at it, it's a functional pattern. It's something that we all should be able to teach and we should all understand. And it's not something that we necessarily have to have a hybrid role behind our name to say that. We just have to teach people the right way.
And be able to own that. We should start to own that more.
We totally should. And I don't know what the future holds for this kind of hybrid role, but it's something I'm very passionate about. And I would love to see, and I don't know if, frankly, do not have the bandwidth to do this right now, but I would love to see some some type of, you know, residency in this. And we're kind of doing this. Like, we have a resident that's coming on in June that's going through the Evidence in Motion program. And she'll learn the basics of, you know, orthopedic evaluations, manual skills, all that good stuff from them, be able to take the OCS in an accelerated manner. But when she's with me, she's going to learn strength and conditioning principles. She's going to learn movement retraining. She's going to learn functional applications of teaching people how to do this stuff, to do it in a gym environment or do it, you know, with the equipment that we have. And so we're kind of testing this with her and to see how it goes. But I would love to see a residency option, or I mean, not a residency, but just like a post training option to where you can learn this stuff. It took me 5 years going to all kinds of different courses to piece together what I do now. And if, damn it, man, if I could expedite that by 4.5 years, that would save me a hell of a lot of time.
If you launch this, I'm signing up. I'll be the first guy in line.
Well, I need to hire a bunch of virtual assistants to do the rest of the shit that I do, I guess, and then another PT. But I see it as it's something that so many people are interested in, and so it's such a need for us to establish a foothold and being able to really be this kind of strength conditioning resource for people that is for people that are injured, and then understanding that coaches have their place too. Like, I don't want to program for somebody and their soccer team and, you know, do all this advanced stuff that a strength coach could do better than me, you know, but I need to understand when's the right time for me to hand it off to them. Right. And how do I know when somebody's really a good coach and somebody's just, you know, has a Facebook page and a loud voice and is spewing a bunch of shit all over everybody on the internet.
Yeah. We talked about that with Jack Chu. Sometimes the guy who's the loudest gets the most attention, and that could or could not be a good thing, especially if what they're saying isn't necessarily great. You brought up upright sports versus more quadruped, or what would you say the tactical athlete is instead of being more upright?
Quadruped, it's everything. So the tactical athlete has to do everything. The way that I look at it is, if you look at the Olympic lifts, if you're a basketball player, I do not think that you need to do full Olympic lifts. I just don't think you need to do it, because your sport does not dictate that you need that range of motion. You know, and not only that, you're 6'6".
Right.
So your levers are longer. You're going to have more load through your joints inherently. So, all right, well, cool. What's the problem with doing a power snatch? Nothing. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, considering it's great for jumping mechanics, explosion, you know, and overhead stability. It's a great movement. But a tactical athlete has to be able to get on the ground and crawl around. Yeah. It's like a wrestler, right? A wrestler needs to be able to do the full Olympic lifts and have the mobility and the strength to do so, because they're going to be on the ground, yeah. You know, and they're not in an upright sport. So you have to look at the specificity of the sport. And then from there, you can say, okay, well, we can apply these differently for you. And it'd be great if everybody could do it, but maybe it's not necessary for that sport at that time.
Yeah, my dad was a New York City Fire Department lieutenant. And I remember growing up in the firehouse. And, you know, as a kid, I rode on the fire truck to fires sometimes with my dad. And you watch all the movies about firefighting. Everyone's just walking in, standing upright, holding the hose and the axe. And then I went to a training session with them in the basement, where they wore a blacked out mask and they would just crawl around on the floor. And I'm like, why are you crawling? I'm like 12 or 13. Why is everybody just crawling around? He said, well, it's really hot when you stand up in a fire. So I spend a lot of time crawling around in the dark. And I remember the light bulb just went on. And I said, but what do you mean? In all the movies, I see you standing up. But no, he's a tactical athlete. My dad crawled around. He crawled down burning hallways. He didn't walk down burning hallways.
Sure, sure. So, and that's a perfect example, right? So, you know, it's specificity of their job, specificity of their sport. And all of these communities are getting more knowledgeable in these areas. It's not just run, push-ups, sit-ups, and even a lot of these places have taken pull-ups out because people can't do them.
Right.
You know, like, they just literally will fail too many people if they can't do the damn, you know, pull-ups. It's ridiculous, man. If there's a really interesting text. It's the World War II Strength and Conditioning Manual. A friend of mine actually emailed this to me. I have it on PDF. I'll send to you. It's a huge text. But what these guys are doing, like, back tuck, backflips, they're doing, like, way harder shit than you and I would ever imagine. Our grandparents that were just crushing the Nazis were way tougher than you and me.
Greatest
you
know, generation.
And their PT, of course they were, man. My grandfather's 92 years old. He had to get pushed in a wheelchair for me to pick him up at the Atlanta airport. My son came with us. He's 4 years old. So he's got this walker that has this little seat on the front. He did not want to get pushed in this wheelchair. He was pissed. So he gets out. He's super rude to the person that pushes him. Go figure, because he's old and doesn't care at this point. He walks over to my son. Deadly. He picks him up, puts him on the front of his wheelchair, just to, like, show this guy that he didn't need his help, and then pushes his stroller with my son on the front, his walker with my son on the front, out to my car. That's the kind of men we're talking about, dude. That's what we should be. That's. I hope I'm like my grandfather when I'm his age.
How do we get away from that? Where'd that go? Do we just get too cushy and too comfortable with cell phones and texting and computers or what?
You know, I had this conversation with my father-in-law is a retired Marine drill instructor. I think that people... they coddle people too much.
Yeah.
And not to say that we need to berate people, but it's weird. It's like everybody, sure, everybody can have their own opinion, but you know what? Sometimes you need to get yelled at and sometimes you need to be put in your place. And even just the other day, I was at a lacrosse game with him and he's the ROTC director at this high school, but he also coaches lacrosse. And these two kids were, they had got this, administrator's chair, a rolling chair, and we're pushing it around the track on the outside of the football field. And there were two lacrosse players that were his players. So he called up a trainer to get him over there. And in front of me and my 4-year-old son, he has him stand at attention. And he said, "Is life hard for you as a dumbass? Do you want to be a dumbass the rest of your life?" And parents are standing right there and all this stuff. And you know what? And they were like, sorry, Gunny. And they left. And a lot of kids don't get that stuff. You know, they need structure, but they coddle people too much. And I just wish that it wasn't that way. Cause you know what, man, the world is not.
Well, sometimes you need a boot in your ass. And the problem is, I think, you know, I have a buddy who's a teacher. And if he said that, he'd be like nervous about losing his job, but that needs to be said. Sometimes you're being a dumbass needs to be said.
Well, I don't know how my father-in-law hasn't lost his job.
Well, yet. Who's going to fire that guy? I'd be afraid of that guy too.
It's great. But the thing is, they like it. It's weird. It's, you know, they like getting yelled at. Like they don't have kids like structure. You know, people like structure.
Well, they like pushing the boundaries. I coach 250 right. kids on a swim team and they like, you know, they know when they're pushing the boundaries. When you reel them back in, they're like, okay, yeah, I screwed up right there. I probably shouldn't have been a dumbass.
Yeah. So this is good, man. I mean, you think this is a physical therapy podcast? Wrong. This is a how to not be a pussy podcast. This is how to be a man, you know, and raise your kids that way. And, you know, so, but I mean, it is what it is. I see it. It's annoying. I see it all the time. And yeah, people just don't get so upset over little things.
Yeah, I like that. All right, well, we've taken a lot of your time. Each episode is a pint, but before we're done with the pint, we do shots, parting shots of wisdom and inspiration. If you were going to leave everybody out there listening with one parting shot, what would it be?
Well, I would say wake up every morning and commit to being better that day than the day before. That could mean listening to a podcast, reading a blog, reading a book that has something to do with personal development maybe, or spending a little bit of extra time with somebody and really delving into what you think a problem might be. Every single day in our profession, we don't really have a choice because we'll get lost really quickly if we don't constantly progress. But every day you should commit to being better than you were the day before. And if you're not, then you might want to find something else to do because you're going to be obsolete pretty fast.
Yeah, that goes along with what you were just saying, which is we need to walk the walk. We need to lead from the front. And if we're doing that, then we can actually, with a straight face, tell our patients to do that. Just be a little bit better tomorrow than I was today.
For sure. So I wake up every morning. It's, you know, I have 6 a.m. patient every morning. I'm excited to go to work. I like it. I have no problem getting out of bed. And it's because I enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
And I think that most PTs do as well. And here's the other thing I would say is you can get disgruntled as well if you think you're going to do something really cool and you end up in a place where you're seeing 25 people a day in a model that's like high volume. It's all about how many value units did you get for this and that. That's bullshit. That's not the way it should be. And people like myself, that it's kind of odd to think about going outside of the network and kind of this rogue position where you're not really doing the same thing that everybody else is. But you know what? It's a viable model. It's a model that you'll be a lot happier in if that's something that you're interested in. And you don't have to just settle for taking this crappy job because you think that's the only way. There's other ways to go about it. So, you know, seek some of that stuff out if that's the role that you want to take. And you got to find something that makes you want to get up every morning and be the best you can.
Yeah, I like that. Good parting shot to leave us on. Check him on Twitter, Danny Mata PT. Make sure you listen to him and Coach Joe, the Doc and Jock podcast, 2 episodes a week. You guys are moving to Tuesdays and Fridays, currently in the top 30 of the health and fitness podcasts on iTunes and his website for his clinic, athletespotential.com. Danny, pleasure. Hope it's not the last time we talk because I learned a lot and it got me fired up to graduate in a couple months. I'm really excited.
Yeah, well, good for you, man. It's going to be one of the best days of your life when you don't have to be in school the whole time and you get to finally go out and change the world.
Looking forward to it. Appreciate you taking the time out, man.
All right, thanks for having me.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all.
The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.